Hey everyone, welcome to Daily Dose of Serotonin, the show about mental health delivered in a less conventional way. We all have health and we've all got a brain, so we've all got mental health that we need to take care of. I'm here to break down the walls, stigma, boxes, labels. I'm not here to educate or diagnose, and I'm especially not here to tell you what to do, because you are the one with the wisdom and the answers. And I am here to present new ideas, new perspectives, so that you can find your own answers and live a life a little healthier, happier, you-ier. Oh yeah, and I'm Sarah Pringle, your host. But that's not really important because you're the star here. All right, if you're ready, here's your little dose of serotonin. Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Daily Dose of Serotonin. This is episode 44, and I have an absolutely incredible human being on today that I've wanted since the beginning to come on the show and share his story. Justin Bryan, I learned about from the Aware One podcast with Derek Mooney back pre-COVID, so about 3 years ago, and I heard him speak and was like, I need him on, I'm going to start a podcast and I'm going to have him on the show. And I created a vision right then and there because the way you spoke directly to me. And I know that you will speak directly to so many people. He is a father of two incredible little children, and you play hockey, and you are a speaker and life coach and the creator of Stronger You Project, which we will talk about in the show. Justin Bryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Sarah, and thank you for having me as a guest on your podcast. I know we tried to line this up earlier, but as we all know, you know, life happens, and I'm very grateful that you brought me on to, you know, share my story and hopefully give people hope and inspiration and encouragement to become their strongest versions.
I love it. I'm so very excited. You've definitely changed my life considerably. So I hope that all of you listening, you feel the same way as well. So I didn't want to go on and on about the introduction and how amazing you are. But if you could give us a little taste of who you are, a little appetizer of like who Justin is, and maybe even just start with your story and give us that.
Well,
I tell you to do an appetizer and then I'm like, opening.
Well, my name is Justin Bryan and I'm a mental health advocate, an inspirational speaker and a professional executive coach. However, to put, let's say, those titles in front of my name, I had a 16-year long battle with alcohol abuse, a 10-year battle with drug abuse. And, you know, I had a very big chunk of my life from childhood dealing with, you know, depression and my mental health. And, you know, I was actually diagnosed at 28 years old with clinical depression, which is a major depression. It's a sadness that persists for longer than 2 weeks. Unfortunately for me, you know, it was a big chunk of my life, like I said. I was diagnosed with social anxiety and general anxiety, which made it very hard for me to be around people. So what I would do is I'd have an algorithm of how many drinks I would have before I even left my house to play sports, hang out with friends. And then at 30, I was diagnosed with ADHD, that's attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And, you know, it made it hard for me to be, you know, be as present as I should be in a conversation. And then I would forget what people said. And all of a sudden my anxiety would start to go up and that would trigger my depression. And all of a sudden, hey, you know what? I'm drinking more, you know, to cope with that, to bring down my nerves. Now, if you pair all those diagnoses with, you know, substance abuse, well, that's a recipe for disaster. And I ended up becoming suicidal for six straight years. And there was, you know, I'm very lucky now that I think back on it to be here, to have two children, to have the life that I'm living right now. You know, throughout my younger years, growing up, I had very low self-esteem, very low self-worth, very low self-confidence. I was fantastic though at hiding it. Because what I did with those insecurities was is I put them in a bag and I put them on my back. And then I tried to be the funny man. You know, I always tried to make people laugh. People notice me because I didn't like me. You know, and I always put everybody up on a pedestal ahead of me. Like, I did that all through my life. Like, I would hang out with people and be like, oh, you know, you're so cool. You're so much better than me. You know, got to the point where I wanted to be everybody else but me. And it took me until I was 30, 34 years old to start coming out of that shell. You know, every now and then I would catch myself, like, oh, I want to be you. But I'm like, nah, I don't want to be you. I want to be me. But I want to have some of your traits. You know, I want to be good at some of the things you're good at. But taking that through high school, you know, that bag, you know, it started to get heavy eventually. And what it did when it got heavy is I took it off my back. I opened up the bag. And instead of unpacking it, I started to put, you know, anger, depression, drugs, alcohol, and suicidality in that bag. And I put it on my back again. You know, by the time I was 21, I was drinking almost every single day. I didn't drink much in high school. You know, it wasn't for me. But when I started to find out the person that it made me, the feelings that it gave me, I started to really like that. You know, it gave me fake happiness, fake confidence, fake self-esteem, right? But I didn't realize that everything it was giving me was fake, but everything it started to take from me was very real. By the time I'm 24 years old, I'm a full-blown alcoholic, and I'm bartending downtown Vancouver, and I believe there are two pivotal moments at 24 that really stick out for me in my life. And when I was bartending, one of the other bartenders came up to me, and he's like, Justin, I need to ask you something. I said, yeah, sure. He's like, do you think you drink too much? And it's because every single night I'd be out. I would close up that bar within 15, 20 minutes. I would be out for power hour, whatever it was. And I'd drink as much as I could. And then I'd go home and I'd phone up, dial a bottle and have more alcohol waiting for me. But then I'd come in hungover. So this, everyone started to notice. Everyone knew, you know, they called me JP, it was my name. JP, he needs to go out and drink. He needs to go out and party. But I did my job well. So he finally came up to me and asked me, he's like, Justin, do you think you drink too much? And I looked at him and I said, no. And I brushed him off because I didn't listen to anybody. And I said, there's no way I drink too much. I'm young. I like to have fun. There's no way. And then I did what I did every single night. Closed up that bar within 15, 20 minutes. Went out for a power half hour. And, you know, got as drunk as I could. And then I started walking home. And on that walk home, a thought rang through my head. And it says, Justin, do you drink too much? And I was like, no, no way. I'm young. I like to have fun. I'm in this big, beautiful city, and I'm a bartender. So I took a couple more steps and a couple more steps. And then all of a sudden, a thought rang through my head. Justin, are you an alcoholic? And then I got this warm feeling rush up through my body. I'm like, there's no way I'm an alcoholic. And this is what I said word for word. I go to work, I pay my bills, I'm not a low life, and I am too smart to be an alcoholic. I was so smart that I graduated from alcohol abuse that year to drug abuse. You know, I did cocaine for the very first time. I'm at 24 years old, and I didn't remember the night. So I phoned my buddy up, and I asked him, hey, man, what happened last night? And he said, we did drugs. I was like, oh, no way. It's not like I was against people doing them, but I was against me doing them. But then he said something that you should never say to a person with my mindset. And he's like, man, you were funny last night. Then right then and there, it clicked for me. I have alcohol for confidence. I have drugs to be funny. You know, I got Michael's special juice from Space Jam. One shot of this and I'm super Justin. 6 months later, I moved back home and I'm managing the nightclub and said, I'm an arm and, you know, I had to get a ride home that night because I lost my license for drinking and driving. And on the way home, we started talking about the topic of depression. And to where I looked at my friend and I'm like, you know what, man? Depression, it's for the weak. Depression's an excuse. You got to man up. You got to go to work. You got to pay your bills. Now, I don't know why I said it back then, but I definitely know why I said it now. And it's because I still had that feeling I had in high school of being less than. And I wanted to look stronger than I was feeling on the inside, on the outside. So 24 years old, I have two major problems, mental health, my substance abuse. 24 years old, I'm ignoring my mental health and my substance abuse. Now, I went down this path of destruction. I've lived in 17 different places, towns in my life. I've moved 17 or 18, maybe 19 different times. And it's because I kept moving away and I kept getting jobs bartending, but I kept burning those bridges by, you know, maybe drinking on the job or going to work drunk. And then finally at 28, I'm like, okay, I can't do this anymore. So I moved back home. I never told anybody. You know, I hid in my house, in my parents' house for about 2 months before I even let anybody know. And then I finally was like, I started working at a mill and I was like, I need help, right? So 28 years old, I finally admitted to myself, Justin, you struggle with your mental health. You're depressed. Justin, you have substance abuse. And I had to talk to myself. I had to literally talk to myself and tell myself that. I'm like, okay, you know what? That's okay. Well, I got to ask for help. Well, you know, I asked for help and I've been to over 100 doctor's appointments. I've spent 77 days in rehab. I've been to 45 addiction appointments, 17 psychologists, 10 psychiatrists. I've tried 8 different meds from antidepressants to ADHD to a bipolar med, anger, sleeping. But I found that one why, and the why I'm going to get to, because why ultimately saved my life. All those others had it. Definitely the meds that I took, I wasn't taking them all at one time, but you know, people got to realize that it's an experiment, right? Not everything's going to work for somebody, right? So I finally found something that helped me, that took down my anger and, you know, kind of leveled me off for a bit. But I didn't know that when I asked for help, I'd actually start to become suicidal for 6 straight years. Now, even when I asked for help, the problem was I wasn't accepting it. I would go 1 month, 2 months, 3 months sober, and then 9 months even, and I'd see somebody drinking and be like, well, if you can do it, I can do it. And then one drink would lead to two would lead to three, and all of a sudden I'm blackout drunk and I miss time at work and I miss time with my kid. And when I was 30, a girl that I'd seen on and off came to me one day and she's like, Justin, I'm pregnant. He's like, you have two options. She's like, you can be in this child's life. You don't have to be, or you can. And I chose to be in that child's life. And I was messing around so much, like drinking. I was like, before that kid was born, that I decided, Justin, you need to go to rehab. And so I went to rehab about 2.5 months before he was born. And I go there and I spend my 45 days there in a group of 60 other men. And the first thing I said when I get out is, I'm not done drinking forever. Well, you probably guess what happened when I got out. You know, 1 month later, we have our kid. 2 months later, I'm hitting the bottle, making bad decisions. 6 months later, my girlfriend probably had to make the toughest decision of her life and leave me at my lowest point. And I don't blame her. I wasn't safe to have a kid around. And when she left, I remember walking around the house just thinking, Justin, you did it. You lost everything that matters to you. Everything that was good in your life, you keep throwing away. I was off work at the mill. They actually said, hey, you need to take some time, because I was in no headspace to, you know, work at a mill and drive heavy equipment and work on a 400-degree press. I was forgetting the people's name that were right in front of me. And I'm very lucky and fortunate that I didn't hurt anybody. At the time that she left me, I could only see my kid twice a week for 4 hours at a time, and I couldn't drive with him in my car. So I was per court order. So I was very lucky that she would drop him off for me. But one day, as we all, I was really struggling with my mental health. And as we all know, if you don't get help, you don't take the proper meds, you don't exercise, you don't do the proper coping mechanisms, you don't accept the help that you're given, your mind is going to be really hard to regulate. And I couldn't.
100%.
Yeah. My thoughts were crazy. You know, I was upset. I was sad. I was confused. I was angry. I was depressed. I was suicidal. But I couldn't tell her that, because if I told her that, and what if she told somebody else, then all of a sudden I can't see my son because I'm an unfit father. So she dropped him off and I said goodbye. And what does a 2-year-old want to do when he sees his dad? Well, he wants to play with daddy. So I picked him up and I took him to the store, got him some chips, candy, and brought him back home, put him in front of the TV. And as he sat there distracted with that bag of chips, candy, and a movie, I walked behind him and I started to stare at the back of his head. And then I started to cry. And I started to ask myself this question that I asked myself every day for 6 straight years, Justin, are you going to make it? Are you going to make it to see him score his first goal? Are you going to make it to see him graduate? Are you going to make it to see him get married? And the answer inevitably every single time was no. I couldn't see myself in his future because I thought he deserved better than me. You know, I felt so low about myself. And there was one time I ended up in the hospital with alcohol poisoning. And my son came in and he looked at me and he looked at his mom and said, "Mom, what's wrong with dad?" I just knew. I'm like, this kid deserves better than me. So I got this mindset where I need to end my life so this kid can have a better dad. And I try to tell people that when you get into that mindset, it's very hard to get out. But when you're in that mindset, you start to tell yourself what I believe is the world's biggest lie. And that this world's better off without you. Because the truth is, this world's better off with you. You know, you were created on purpose for a purpose. Everybody has a purpose in life. You know, if that purpose is to be a janitor, you know, that purpose is to, you know, make somebody smile. If you work at McDonald's, to be a door greeter, it doesn't matter. As long as you're bringing smiles to people's faces and you are happy, that's the thing that matters. And this world needs your possibilities. It needs your capabilities and it needs your smiles. You know? So one of the biggest things that helped me is I was starting to work out during these times and I started to listen to these motivational speaking on YouTube and I had no idea who the guys were I was listening to. And it was guys like Inky Johnson, Trent Shelton, Eric Thomas, and Les Brown. Now, I definitely know who those guys are now, but I had no idea who they were back then. I was just listening to music or motivational speaking, trying to get in the zone. Then I was in the gym and I'm like, don't talk to me. Don't look at me. I need to listen to these guys. But they all had something in common. And the one thing I kept hearing was, find your why. So I started to ask myself, Justin, what is your why? And I started to look at the little boy again. And I started to reframe my thought. Instead of, you know, I need to end it. So this kid has a better dad. Why don't I get better so I can be that dad? I knew I could be the dad. I knew I'm a good person. I made tons of mistakes. And yes, there's some I regret. I can't take it back, but I got to accept them. But I knew that I could be that dad if I just get better. So what did I have to do? Well, I had to go back to rehab. And then when this time I went back to rehab, I went with the power of why. And when I was there, they taught us the how, right? Because the why is the belief and the how is the action. And Friedrich Nietzsche says, he who has a why can bear almost any how. So in rehab, they're teaching us the how, like journaling and gratitude and the importance of, you know, releasing your happy chemicals like dopamine, serotonin. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Endorphins, right? So they're teaching us all about this. One of the biggest things they taught us about is the power of acceptance and forgiveness. And I even learned about acceptance in my first coaching course. The thing about acceptance and forgiveness that people need to realize is that acceptance and forgiveness is for you. Now let's start with acceptance. What is acceptance? Well, you're going to have things in your life that are going to happen to you. You're going to have experiences, traumas, people are going to hurt you. Maybe it's you. Maybe you feel hurt by God. I don't know, your higher power. But there are going to be, you might not get a job you like or that you wanted, but there are going to be things in your life that happen to you that you're going to have to accept. And why do you have to accept them? Well, you have to accept that they truly happened and you have to accept them so that you can forgive them. Because if you don't accept it, well, then you won't be able to create that future that you want to create because you're going to be stuck living in that past. Now, when it comes to forgiveness, if somebody hurt you, someone did something to you, maybe it's you got to forgive them and you got to forgive them for you. And I know it's hard. It can be very hard. But the thing about forgiveness is that you do not have to forgive that person to their face. But you have to take a second to forgive them for you. We did this visualization exercise, let's say, in rehab where we just sat there, we closed our eyes, and we thought about the person that hurt us. And then we forgave them. And I was sitting there, I'm like, I'm crying. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm like, don't look at me. It's hot. I'm sweating. But I realized that I didn't have to forgive that person to their face, right? But more often than not, there's going to be times that you're going to have to accept what you've done and then forgive yourself. And then once you forgive yourself, you can truly step into who you want to be in the future. And that what accommodates that as well is loving yourself, accepting yourself, forgiving yourself, and then loving yourself. And it took me until about, 36 years old, like probably last year, I got sober, did all that stuff. And it took me until probably 36 years to finally, I was 36 years old, to forgive myself, accept myself, and be like, yo, you know what? I've always loved myself. It's just, I was disappointed in some of the things I was doing, because I knew every single time I picked up that drug, I picked up that alcohol, I was not only going to hurt myself, but I was going to hurt like times my kid, times at work, and I was going to hurt my family. I was going to hurt all those people, right? And then when you do that, all of a sudden you got the guilt and the shame that creeps in. Brene Brown says, shame eats secrets for breakfast. Shame is the silent killer, right? And so I was letting all that kind of, build up in me, but I finally started to let it go and accept myself for who I was. But to get to that point, I had to put down the alcohol. And on January 4th, 2019, I hospitalized myself with suicidality and alcoholism. And I finally said those words out loud that, I had a plan. That plan was to end it. Now, it's not like I wanted to die, but I really thought I had to. Like, I thought I had to get rid of this pain. But what I wasn't doing was committing to my medication, committing to my appointments, committing to my coping mechanisms, to my diet, to my exercise, committing to myself that, I deserved to be here. I started to look every day in the mirror and tell myself, hey, Justin, I love you. Whether I believed it or not, I made sure that I said it. And because I did all that and hospitalized myself, I finally committed to doing all those things, to journaling and gratitude and all of that kind of stuff. And then 6 months later, I was able to get back together with the mother of my children. Since we got back together, we've actually had another daughter. And so now we have a 7-year-old and 16-month-year-old. 16-month-year-old. Is that how 16-month-old?
That would be it.
I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's correct, but I said it. But it took a lot. Now I'm a coach and I'm a speaker, and I get to help people in my Stronger You project, and I get to travel to speak and turn my pain into my purpose and my history essentially into healing. But to get to the point, I had to do everything. It wasn't just one thing. But to be able to be in my son's life every day now, and to be able to see him score his first goal in hockey, and coach him now, and realize that if there's a kid that's messing around at practice and I look over, it's probably my kid because he's exactly like me, but that's okay. I had to do a lot of, inner work, dark work, deep work, inner healing, all that kind of stuff to be able to get to where I am today now.
Oh, honestly, I feel like I shouldn't even speak because you are so... I've listened to your story a few times through the podcast, and both just listened to the podcast multiple times that you were on, and also just through your lives. But I see myself in so many aspects, and you have to do the work. And the biggest thing that stuck out for me is you actually have a sign above your head that says, be kind to yourself. And I think, and for those listening, is when we go through these mental health struggles, and you mentioned Brene Brown with shame, is as soon as we're so ashamed of it, we don't get help. We don't try. We don't forgive ourselves. We're not kind to ourselves. And then we just get stuck in that cycle and we keep doing the things. I had so many questions and then you'd answered them. I still have a few for you. But first of all, thank you for sharing your story, and not just here, but on stages and continuously, because I shared a lot of deep things for the first time on my show a few recordings ago. And I was like, it's so important for people to hear, but it's so, so hard to do. So I just want to acknowledge that. Thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you very much. Good for you. I'd honor you for sharing, opening up, and sharing, being vulnerable and showing your authenticity, what it was a couple episodes ago, because, we all have a story. We all have a story, but everybody's story is important and everybody's story is unique. And there's millions of our stories out there. And what helped, I think, by listening to you, and what helped me was listening to people like me struggle and listening to what they did to get better, or seeing them get better and be like, whoa, well, if they can do it, I can do it. It might take me a little bit longer, but being able to share your story is definitely healing for me, and I know it can help other people.
It's so true. And it's just that relating with people and knowing that you're not alone, and knowing you, I feel like you can forgive yourself a little more when you hear that other people have done the same or go through the same thing. So One thing I wanted to ask you for sure was, and I feel like you've already answered it, or I might know what you're going to say, but for someone who's trying to support someone with addiction currently, I think a lot of times we think that we can help, and we can, but it's more of like a supporting role, because as I know for even myself, who have had really unhealthy coping mechanisms for my mental health, whether it's not been, you know, drugs or alcohol, it's been self-harm in other ways, I found that I had to be the one to decide, because I had so many people offering help. But how would you say that you could, like, what was it that really you needed and someone was able to give you at that time? Was how much weight went on people's words and people's support, or was it more you that had to change?
I had to change. There was nobody that was going to change me but me. I was offered tons of support. I was going to counseling, and I hated every second of it, because I kept thinking, why would these people want to take my coping mechanism away? I went to victim mentality. I'm like, I hate myself if I'm not drunk. Right. So I kind of took it and I turned it almost, I guess, and said, why would you guys want to do this to me? Right. Why would you want to take my coping mechanism away? And I had to find my why. And basically it came down to, I was either going to take my life or get better. And I was very fortunate that I had my son. Now, if you want to support somebody with substance abuse, you could offer them resources. Don't force them resources. I mean, offer them stuff they can do. Don't push it down their throat. Just, you know, have pamphlets or brochures, or, you know, AA meetings, NA meetings. There's so many, or numbers. There's so many options out there. There's online, there's in your community, there's whatever your local health authorities are. You can give them that option, or just ask them to talk to you. You know, sometimes it might be making a boundary with them. You know, Renee, my girlfriend, had to leave me, and that sucked. She had to leave me at my lowest point. And you know what? I don't blame her. And it probably had a hand in me getting better. Because if I kept going down the road that I was going to, knowing that she was always going to be there, but don't get me wrong, she was still there for me sometimes to listen when I wasn't a mess. She was still there to listen to me, which is another thing that you can be there for somebody. You can be there to listen. But you also have to protect your time and space and your boundaries, so that your energy, your time, is not getting drained yourself. So you can offer people resources. You can be there to listen. Don't judge them, right? Listen to them, not with sympathy, but with empathy. Try to put yourself in their shoes. But also, you might have to make a boundary with them. But listen, like, you can, we can talk, we can hang out, but you can't drink, right? But make it known to them. You know, there's two ways you can look at this. I know my mom let me live in her house because I wasn't abusing that situation. I wasn't, you know, stealing from her or anything like that. If you have somebody that lives in your house that's using, you can either kick them out, right? Make that boundary, or you can let them live there. I know for me, I'm very lucky that I didn't. I think that's what helped me the most. And I saw a judge one time on YouTube, and he was talking about his son that overdosed. And he's like, you know, I wish I would have just, instead of kicking him out, I wish I would just let him live in my house. He's like, because I'd rather have him overdose in my house than on the streets. So there's two ways you can look at that as well. You can support them by just helping them, making sure they're going to rehab or they're doing their counseling appointments that way. But that also can be tricky. Or you can make the boundary and say, listen, you're not welcome here anymore until you get better. So there's different ways that you can help them, and not one way is going to work for everybody, right? I know there's stories where people had to get kicked out and it was the best thing for them, right? They came back stronger. But there's some times where people just need that extra support, and that's where you got to decide yourself what's going to work best for you, so that your time and energy is not getting drained helping that one person out.
So true. There's no right or wrong, and we can't be so hard on ourselves for doing what we have to. And sometimes, like you said, the best things that ever happened to me were some friends who did set a boundary, because they didn't allow me to stay that victim. And then there's other times where I've had some not so nice things said to me that definitely put me in a space. But again, I can't blame the other people. There was really, at the end of the day, I am not to blame, but to take responsibility. So that is a perfect answer. Hopefully that is helpful for everyone listening, because it definitely is for me. I have some friends in my life that I try to support, and naturally I just want to wrap them in a hug and just make it all better, and I can't, and it's frustrating and it's sad. But I also know for me, the best thing is sometimes just we have to do it, and there's no question. So moving forwards, let's talk about what you're doing now, because you are here with us and that is amazing. And I am beyond grateful, because you are probably one of the most influential people in my life. You don't maybe know it, but you have helped me so, so, so much with so many things that you've said to me in super dark times. And so what is the Stronger You Project, and what else are you here trying to create, and what is your mission in this beautiful world?
My mission statement is to inspire and encourage, and let's say invite people to become their strongest versions. And, you know, I have this thing I created called the Stronger You Project. Well, I have my two different life coaching certifications, one through the Rainer Institute. Well, three different, I guess, one accredited and one professional through the Rainer Institute out of Calgary. And then I got my Tony Robbins Strategic Intervention certification. But what I did is that I took things that I knew and I researched and stuff that I learned from rehab, and I made up about 17, 18 modules. So what people do is that if they want to, you know, work with me, we actually go through, it's a 12-week course, essentially 14, because you got a onboarding and a graduation, you get a certificate. But they work with me for 14 weeks. It's one-on-one. We not only talk about what do you want to create in your life, you know, what's going on at that current situation, but I give you modules. And these modules have thought-provoking questions that give you a visual representation on some of the struggles in life and some of the ways that you can deal with it. So I have modules like self-limiting beliefs, procrastination, accountability, roadblocks, finding your why, your non-negotiables, and the promises you have to make to yourself and stick to, goals, habits, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, all these modules that we can pick and choose from just to give you that edge. But then I work with you in the, you know, typical coaching situation, as we go over what do you want to create in your life, what's coming up for you right now, what's a win, you know, what's an aha moment, what do you need or perspective do you need to move past an old roadblock that you may have in your life. So I do that with people. Not only that, I do go around to businesses. I go around, I've done my presentation, I have a 45-minute to 55-minute keynote speech. I've done it at organizations like Mills, minor hockey. I'll probably be doing it for a junior hockey team. Schools, restaurants in the hospitality industry. So what I do is I take my four main sections, but I can tailor it because of the life that I've lived. I've been in the hospitality industry. I've been working up north, and I'm transitioning to doing, like, hopefully some pipeline stuff for those guys, you know, guys that work in those kind of industries. So I take my story and I tailor it, but I keep my main message the same and the same points so that I can make it relatable to them, but also they can get their takeaways, because my speech is not just my story. My speech is my story with about 10 learning lessons, how to implement them, and then an example attached to it. Not only that, they get, you know, a mental health menu that I've created, which is thought-provoking questions and, you know, tips and tricks on working on your mental health. And then a summary of my speech, just in case, you know, they want to take home and they want to remember what I talked about, because my main points, I talk about mental health and substance abuse, but my main points, you can actually take, you know, if you have an issue or problem in your life, you can take that problem, put it above the point, and then go through it like a checklist. Okay, this is what I have to do. And so I do that. I've been very fortunate to be able to do that. I used to manage Mr. Mike's, and they actually brought me in to be their coach and to run a Facebook group for them, which is pretty cool because I never actually done that before. I run a Facebook group. And I'm actually currently writing a book.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, my plan is to have it out hopefully by February. And it will be a story of my life and learning lessons. And every chapter will probably have a lesson attached to it with thought-provoking questions to do. So that I plan to have it out by February. It will be out by February. And my next thing is to do a TED Talk.
So amazing. I am so happy that the world has you. I'm so, so grateful. There's so much you're providing for everybody, and a TED Talk. That's on my bucket list as well. So,
Whistler, me.
Sorry,
Whistler and me.
Oh,
open January 20th.
Okay. I do want to respect your time. There's so much I want to keep asking you, but there's one question that I like to ask everybody who comes onto the show. And so if you were speaking into this microphone and all 8 billion or however many people we have in the world now could hear what you're saying, what is one thing that you would like to say to everyone?
Oh, geez. There's millions of things I want to say to everybody.
Just one thing.
One thing. Okay.
Sum up, Justin.
Life is hard. But it doesn't have to be harder than it already is. If you want to get better, you have to ask for help. Asking for help is actually a sign of strength and not weakness. And because I asked for help, I'm able to be able to do what I love. Because I accepted the help, I'm able to do what I love to do. I was able to step into my purpose and my passion. You know, there's one time where I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but all I did was I just kept walking.
I love that question because everyone has such a different answer and it hits so differently. Life is hard. It definitely is hard, but it doesn't have to be harder for sure. Where can people find you? Because I want them to get in touch with you and your coaching and hear about your speeches so that they can go to them. Please let us know. I'll put that in the show notes as well. But
sure. So you can find me on my website at www.justinbryan.com. Instagram is at justinbryan19. My TikTok, which I never thought I'd ever have, is Justin Inspiration. And that's pretty much what I got for social medias and my platforms.
Perfect.
But definitely check out my website. I would love, DM me. Let me know what you got out of this, how you're doing, your big aha moment. What is a takeaway for you? I'd love to hear what's going on in your life.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for being such a light in this world. There's still so many things that hopefully you'll come on for a round two in the not too far away future, because wow, your story really, really has impacted me so much. And what you're doing is helping so, so many people. Again, thank you so, so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Sarah, so much for having me.
And everyone else, I hope you got out of this as much as I have. Go reach out to Justin because he is incredible. You need to get in touch with him. Hope everyone is having a wonderful morning or night or day. Give yourself a hug, and we will all talk soon. for joining me on another episode of Daily Dose of Serotonin. If this episode put a smile on your face or helped you in any way, please share it with someone who needs to hear how special they are. And most importantly, if you need a smile or an ear to listen, please reach out. I'd love to connect with you and send positive vibes and virtual hugs. You can find all my info to connect in the show notes. Keep shining, friends. Sending so, so, so much love.